Hey, if you want to help out this podcast, help out our sponsor, Sophie Reaptress, a small one-person business in Philadelphia. Cave suits is what we're talking about. She makes some of the best cave suits you'll ever try. They come in all kinds of colors. My wife is getting the olive green. She loves it. And Sophie's got a lot of that olive green if you want some, but she's got an awful lot more. You just get check out SophieReaptress.com and you'll see all those colors. If you've ever shopped for a cave suit, you know they don't come in a ton of colors. Well, Sophie's do. SophieReaptress.com, or you can find her on Instagram at SophieReaptress. She makes them so they fit a number of body types, and she makes them with 500 denier cordura and 1,000 denier cordura where you need it most, in elbows, butts, knees, places where you'll get a lot more abrasion, contact points, you know. And she'll do add-ons like extra pockets, inside pockets, which are handy, knee pad pockets, just slip the knee pads right in there. She'll do bat stencils wherever you want them. If you've been thinking about a cave suit, get one from Sophie, SophieReaptress.com. Welcome to the Caving Podcast. I'm Matt Pelser of the Central Indiana Grotto. A grotto is like a local chapter of the National Speleological Society here in the United States. In other parts of the world, there are caving clubs. And when it comes to caving, we recommend that you join one so you can make friends, because caving is not something you want to do by yourself. And it's something that you want to do with people who know what they're doing the first few times you do it, so that you can learn from the people who know, because like a lot of things, if you don't know what you're doing, it can be dangerous. And quite the opposite once you get a little experience. So if you're in the United States and you want to find a grotto, you can do so at the NSS website, caves.org. I'll link you to it, too, in the description of this podcast, caves.org. And my guest this month is Zeke McKee, Tennessee caver. I've followed some of his stuff online, and I got to meet him when I was down at Sarah back in May. And this is kind of a different interview. We sat down for, 35 minutes or so when we were down at Sarah in person. We'd had a few beers, which may or may not be evident by the beginning of the conversation. But there was a lot that was left to talk about. And so we rejoined a few weeks later, and you'll be able to hear that turn in the episode. I'll talk more about Zeke in a second. This weekend, Indiana Cave Capers, the big event that I never miss, or I try not to. And indeed, I will be leading a trip on Friday with Laura Demarest to Indiana's Breathing Hole Cave, which is on state land. And we got special permission to go in a bunch of these state caves. And we'll be in Corydon, Indiana, which is near some of the best state-owned caves in Indiana. So you'll want to come visit. We're in the Harrison County Fairgrounds. It's downtown Corydon, basically. So there's a lot of city amenities, or large town, you might say. Corydon was the first state capital of Indiana, which is pretty cool. And I'll be working registration on Saturday morning. So if you arrive on Saturday, that'll be me checking you in. And then Saturday night, I'll be hosting the banquet. And then there's the special presentation by Ran Hazlett on the Fern Cave Project. A banquet, by the way, is going to be handled by New Albany's Fistful of Tacos. And plenty of live music. Let's see, Friday night, live music from Muchos Garcias. Saturday night, the Bourbon Britches, all-girl country rock band. Excellent. Oh, and did I mention it's the 70th Indiana Cave Capers? 70. For 70 years, our grotto, the Central Indiana Grotto, has been putting on this event. I think that's so cool. Online pre-registration is closed, but you can just show up and find me at registration. If you're showing up Saturday, we'll get you all set up. Or whoever's working registration, they'll get you set up. If you do come, say hi, for real. Come find me. Find my campsite. We'll hang out or something. I don't know. Maybe go caving. I'm intentionally leaving Sunday open in case, we get a wild hair and somebody wants to do a trip. That sounds good to me. So, would love to see you at Indiana Cave Capers. Another thing, a couple of Mondays ago, some cavers from the area, the Ohio Valley area, so Indiana, Ohio, Kentucky, all got on a Zoom call and met about the 2026 NSS convention. And I'm just going to speak it into existence here. They're putting in a bid for 2026 to host the national convention. Actually, on the site, we're thinking it'll be on the site that Indiana Cave Capers is this weekend, at least part of it. There's going to be different parts being handled in different places. We're going to dip into Kentucky. We're going to, obviously be in Indiana. So it'll be like an Ohio Valley regional thing. But we're looking at 2026 for the NSS convention to return to Indiana. For at that time, it'll be the first time in 19 years. 2007 was the last one in Indiana.
So big thanks to Laura Demarest and Dean Wiseman, who are kind of heading that up. I had a lunch with Dean Wiseman last Friday. We talked about all kinds of stuff. And, of course, Laura, can't wait to see you this weekend at Capers. So 2026, we'll see you in Indiana, we hope. Fingers crossed. Okay, Zeke. Zeke was great. Zeke McKee is a Tennessee caver. And like I said, this interview is in two parts. The first part was in person at Sarah. And then at the second part, I had forgotten what we talked about. So we did reiterate a few things. But I'd like to say there's more details about the survey and the rescue that took place in Heart of Gold Cave. And more details about survey and access issues in Enigma Cave in the second part versus the first part. So if it seems a little redundant, that's why. There were a few beers and maybe a little bourbon that influenced the first part of this talk here. So I hope you enjoy it. Zeke, I had a great time. Here's me and Zeke McKee. How are you, man?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Doing okay. Did you do any caving today?
I went to Cedar Ridge Crystal Cave for the first time.
First time?
Yeah.
Are you a one-and-done kind of caver?
Not necessarily.
Yeah? Where do you frequent back to?
White County, Putnam County, that area. Yeah. Where I live at. I'm more of a project caver than touristy caver.
But yeah, you're a project caver.
Yeah.
So what are, I see your name all over the place. I hear people talk about you and stuff. Why are they talking about you?
Probably because they have horrible things to say. They know me too well.
They know you pretty well.
Right.
But I mean, like, you've done an awful lot. You said we were just talking before we started rolling tape. You started in 2016?
2015, 2016.
2015,
I moved to Sparta, Tennessee in that time, and that's when I got serious about caving. So I'd done some caving when I was a kid, a little bit of stuff here and there. Mammoth Cave was close to where I grew up.
Okay, so you grew up in Kentucky?
Right on the Kentucky-Tennessee border in Robertson County.
In Tennessee?
In Tennessee.
Okay,
yep.
Right on.
A little town called Cross Plains.
Hmm.
Little town. There were 70 of us in my graduating class.
Well, that's pretty small. But you had done a little bit of caving. What brought you back to it?
Well, I moved to Sparta. Didn't know anybody.
Good place to get back into caving.
That's what we have, is caves. I needed something to do to stay out of trouble, and I got interested in caving and got involved with the Upper Cumberland Grotto, and it just took off. I met a lot of very influential cavers who kind of took me under their wing.
So what was it like then, like, so you just went to a meeting, or someone said, hey, you should do this, or what was it?
My little brother said, hey, there's this cave in Sparta that's the longest cave in the state. It's called Blue Spring Cave, and I want to go there. It's 40 miles, approximately, at that time. And I said, well, that sounds interesting. I'd always kind of been scared of caves as a kid, but we'd go and do some things. And I said, well, I'll go with you, because we'd been getting into rock climbing and other things just since we had moved, trying to find new things to do. And so we went to an Upper Cumberland Grotto meeting, and I was hooked.
That was it. So you just went to the meeting, or you went to a meeting and then a cave trip, and then you were hooked?
I went to one meeting, and we said, what can we do for caving? And they said, well, we'll take you to Indian Grave Point Cave, or IGP as it's known for short. And I went, and I wasn't real impressed, but I wanted to know more. And pretty soon after that, I went to Blue Spring for the first time, and that was it for me.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. What'd you do on that Blue Spring trip?
On that trip, we went to a mega junction, which is a big room back in the cave, and saw all kinds of gypsum and things that I didn't even know existed at the time, because I wasn't into caving, really.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't believe the complexity of the cave. And I'm kind of mechanically minded, and I wanted to know how things laid. I started getting interested in, like, cave mapping and things from there, and that's what drew me into it.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it funny how many, you know, serious project cavers are of that mindset, you know, where it's like, I've been talking to people, and it's like a puzzle for them.
It's completely a puzzle. I want to know where things are at, how they relate above ground, how they relate below ground. It's a mystery. Mm-hmm. It's not like a mountain. You can look at it and say, oh, there it is. You have to go explore it to see what's there.
But you can have that mind and not necessarily have the proclivity to go crawling around in the mud, though. You know what I mean? But
true.
Cavers have to have both of those.
Yeah.
Both of those things, you know. Do you remember, like, as a kid,
one to crawl through cabinets and stuff?
Not at all. As a kid, I was scared to go underground.
Really?
It would be my friends or my family that'd be like, okay, let's go in this cave. And we'd, in Robertson County, where I grew up, right off my grandfather's property, there's a through trip Kilgore Cave. It's about a quarter mile long. You go in a spring entrance and come out of a sinkhole. And we'd go in there and play around. But I was always scared of it. I get things going in my head. Oh, this thing's going to fall down, things like that. I didn't know anything about it.
How'd you get rid of that, do you think?
I think it was just...
It just went away?
Yeah. It was a maturity thing. And I was more curious as an adult than I was as a kid. As a kid, I was a little more frightened by it. But as an adult...
That's like the reverse. That's like the inverse of what most people are like, you know? Kids are... It's easier to take kids on a caving trip than it is to take adults on like a first caving trip, it seems.
It does. I guess I've never thought of that, but yeah, I was a little backwards.
It was a little, but I don't know. Is there any? Have you given any thought to what you could attribute that to at all?
Honestly, I think it just has to do more of growing up in a manufacturing environment where I deal with blueprints and that sort of a thing. So I'm kind of mechanically minded thinking about that.
So anyway. That's your profession.
Yeah. My family has a sandcasting foundry and machine shop.
Okay.
So I grew up doing that. And as those skills developed, it made me more curious about how the world works in general. And I think that's really what's been driving my caving career is just curiosity.
All right. So Blue Spring. You go to Blue Spring and then you're hooked.
Yes.
But then project caving is a whole other thing. That was a wreck trip, I'm assuming.
It was, but Blue Springs still to this day has tons of leads. There's a lot of cave in there, and I started wanting to know about what wasn't on the map.
Yeah.
And so within a few years, we started surveying, and in 2017, there was a big drought. And there was a sump in the cave that had been a sump as long as they'd been exploring it. And we said, well, let's go check it out during the drought, because Bill Walter had kind of put that bug in my ear.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went and looked, and there was no sump. So we came back and surveyed almost a mile in one day that we added to the cave.
Oh, wow.
And so we did a lot of surveying in there, and that's where I cut my teeth on project caving.
That's amazing. That's a big day.
It was. It's probably the most I've ever surveyed in one day. There was two teams, and we leapfrogged through and surveyed this thing.
Is that a dragon you've been chasing? Is that day? Like, to survey that much in a day, or is it you see it that way?
Not really, because that was all wetsuits floating in water, and I'm not really fond of that. I liked the fact that we added so much to the cave, but it wasn't nice passage at all.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, so you added to it, but it's not anywhere many people would want to go back,
right?
Necessarily, or even could. I guess it's probably
it would have to be another drought.
Time.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we talked about Joe Kinder a little earlier. Back then, everybody was working hard in Binkley. And Binkley and Blue Spring have always kind of been close in length.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a little thing back and forth with Joe and the Indiana bunch. Like, oh, we're going to beat Binkley. We're adding footage to Blue Spring again. So it was a fun little thing to do.
Have you been caving with Joe?
No.
Not really? Just know him?
I've met him at TAG a few times. Great guy. Mm-hmm. Like to go caving with him. One of these days I'm going to make it to Capers.
Still haven't. Oh yeah, you got to come to Capers. I still haven't been caving with Joe. I was telling you before we hit record that I was going to go with him and Laura Demarest, who's also been on the podcast, and we were going to do a cool trip on my birthday last year, and I got COVID, and I'll regret it for the rest of my life. It would have been a great weekend with them. So all right, what came after Blue Spring then?
Well,
so you were hooked at that point, would you say? Like, I need more of this after that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Blue Spring is really what was the driver behind my surveying career.
Mm.
And after that, Marion Smith, he kind of wrapped me into Enigma Cave.
Mm.
It needed a map. The original crew had mapped about a mile in there, but they're not very vertically inclined. Marion had people like Elliot Stahl in there climbing these domes. Found this dome complex, extremely complicated, and he knew how my mind worked, and he said, hey, there's this maze that I don't even understand.
Elliot or
Marion?
Marion, okay, gotcha.
So he pulled me into Enigma Cave, and we started mapping that, and that became our Friday projects. We'd go in there with Lee White, Marion and I, Jim Fox, and some other people, and we'd climb domes, and we'd explore the cave. We found all kinds of new cave. Got that to about 4.5 miles long.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Wow. That's a long cave for down here, right?
It is. I mean, we've got a lot of long caves. In
Tennessee, you got a lot of long caves.
That is one of the significant caves. What's most significant about Enigma is the vertical nature of it. It's probably the most vertical cave in the state. We've got a few thousand feet of rope still hanging in there.
Yeah?
There's pits all over the place, interconnecting domes on different levels.
So that's exciting.
It
is. That's fun. That's a playground.
246-foot waterfall and a giant dome room. Mike Green and some other guys, they climbed to the top of that, and there's passage up there that we've never finished surveying.
Mm-hmm.
Needs to be done.
Man, it was a shame about Lee.
It is.
That's
what a
guy. Did you do a lot of caving with him?
He was one of my closest cave friends.
Mm.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, man.
Yeah. He was a good guy.
Yeah. He did a lot.
He taught me a lot. He was the Prometheus in my life that taught me about climbing domes.
Yeah.
He came down with the hammer drill from the gods and said, look, here's how we go up and find more caves. And that's what taught me that, like, the older generations were looking down, where's the water going? But our generation, if you look up...
Where's the water been?
Where has it been? And what is up there? Because we have lithium batteries and these hammer drills where you can climb things that were impossible to climb before.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what led to a lot of what's driving current projects.
Mm-hmm. Like what?
The latest big breakout we've had is Heart of Gold Cave, mm-hmm. which is in Sparta. When I wake up in the morning, I look across the valley and there's Golden Mountain. Never thought much about it, but we're mapping some caves in it. 500-foot long cave is now about 6 miles long.
Oh my God, Tennessee, man!
Right,
like in Indiana, like, you know, we've got some good caves, and we're still looking at some stuff, and we've got some ideas. And I speak as if I have anything to do with it, but it's all what my friends are doing, you know. But gosh, to know that, okay, when did that one start gaining in length?
So we started surveying. We went to the cave for the first time to scout it out, December of 2019.
All right, so you can just stop right there. I mean, not even 4 years, and that's a 6 mile cave gone from whatever it was before. That's insane.
Well, there's a dome at the end of the cave on the sketch map that's over 100 feet tall. And back to Lee, we got to climb all the domes.
Let's just climb it.
We got to see what's up there. So Jim Fox is one of my best cave friends and wrangled him into it. And me and him started climbing that dome. And 2020, he was up there exploring the top of the dome with Marion and Justin Huffman. And there was a rock fall. Jim broke his femur 107 feet off the floor.
Oh, my God. Ow, that's scary.
It was. Huge rescue. Hamilton County Rescue Squad comes up. They haul Jim out of the cave. A few months later, Jim is determined as ever, let's go map the cave.
He comes back in.
We go back. We map all the way to the bottom of the big dome. Jim wants to go up. And I said, we'll come back next trip. I'm scared to go up there. So Jim talks me into it. And we go up there, and there's a hole in the breakdown.
So he recognizes that that was a freak thing, and he's just no fear
right.
to go back. Gosh.
Jim's an incredibly
admirable.
Driven guy.
I guess.
So we go back and rappel through this hole. And I say, there's a little crawl here. It's not going to do anything, hands and knees. Well, I go through the crawl. I come back, Jim, it's going. And from there, we rappelled. The next trip, we rappelled down an 80-foot pit, follow the stream, goes down to a river level at the bottom. We've climbed more domes, and it's a 6 mile cave.
Insane. That's great. So when it comes to, like, survey and everything, like, do you do all of the jobs, or do you have a tendency to do this job or that job?
I run the disto and do the sketches.
Okay. All right. Well,
and then Jim Fox is the bulk climber. Marion used to be our point guy. We trade out point guys now.
You used to have, like, line plot maps and stuff?
I do the whole thing.
You do? Okay.
Cartography and everything.
All right. So you've got that somewhere.
Yeah, it's in I'm trying to finalize the map this year.
Right. Okay. And then you turn that into...
I turn it into the TCS.
TCS. Yeah.
And I'm the map book director for the TCS as well.
Oh, now you're that.
Yeah, I've been the map book director, I think, since 2018.
Right on.
John Smyer was it for 10 years. He moved to mm-hmm. Idaho, I think, and somehow I ended up with the position. Mm-hmm. Unqualified, but here I am.
That's cool, though. You got access to all that.
I've enjoyed it a lot. It's a way for me to give back.
Well, but it's also a way to find... leads that, you know, through knowledge of people whose names are on the original map, like, I think this might keep going. Have you seen any of that? Like,
yeah.
Has that become fruitful for you?
Not really, because I'm very focused right around where I live. Mm. So, White County, Putnam County, Van Buren County, I don't...
It's not worth it to do a bunch of driving if you've got a bunch of good stuff all around you.
Right. Yeah. I had to pass hundreds of caves just to get here this weekend. And that's hard for me to do. It's like when I can drive 5 minutes from the house and go caving and map caves while I go other places.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really a special place, especially where you are. I mean, there's just an awful lot there.
It's how I got into it. That's what there is to do.
Yeah. So I'm sure you've been like ridge walking too and found your own caves.
A little bit. I'm not a whole lot of a ridge walker. I firmly believe that most of the new cave that can be found is going to be in existing caves.
Okay.
Go and map things that people haven't pushed. That way you see it all. Mm-hmm. Go and climb the things that people hadn't climbed. And that's where you're going to find cave.
Mm-hmm. Have you gotten the chance to name a cave?
I've named a few, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Any that you're comfortable sharing?
Most of the caves I've turned in are just little nerd holes, 50, 100 feet long.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Have you gotten creative with any of the names? Because that's like one of my favorite things to hear about.
Not really.
No, not really.
I'm not that creative.
What else has been a big project of note that you're comfortable sharing with?
Well, those are my big ones. I've mapped a lot of small caves.
Mm-hmm.
But those are Enigma, Blue Spring, and Heart of Gold. Those are the real big projects that I've worked. I've helped other people with their projects, but those are the big ones that I've kind of...
And I'm sure that you've got a few places that come to mind that you've got to go back to.
Like, oh yeah,
there's got to be some places that and you don't have to name the cave, of course, but you're like that's got potential.
There's so many.
There's so many.
When you live in a county with 1,400 caves, there's so many.
There's just so many. Have you ever found a cave that you think is done?
No.
No.
I don't think any cave's ever done.
How much digging have you done?
I don't instigate digs, but I've helped out with quite a few digs.
All right.
Enigma Cave specifically, they dug on that cave for 20 years to get it open.
My gosh.
They blasted through a breakdown pile on the side of the river and got into the cave.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, that's necessary, though. I mean, I've heard from some people outside of caving. I mean, inside of caving, digging's no big deal. But outside of caving, you bring up digging, and they're like, I've found that they're like, does that count? I'm like, of course it counts, because there are caves down there that don't have an entrance, you know?
Yeah.
There's plenty of them, especially in the rock around here, in a place around here or around Sparta. That counts, don't you think?
There's so many drainages that we know about from hydrologists working in the state. People like Ben Miller that die trace these things. We know water goes in here. We know it comes out there. Tremendous. Whole rivers come out of the ground in Tennessee without associated cave systems yet.
Yeah.
You have to dig into them.
You got to dig. Sometimes you don't have to go far. In the case of Enigma, it seems like it took a while. But obviously, if you broke into it, you knew something was going to happen. How was it that it was known that something was going to happen in Enigma Cave?
So there was a blowhole on the side of the river.
That'll do it.
It had been known for years. There used to be a railroad bed there, and Thanny Mann had been told by one of the old-timers that people working on the railroad and the logging in the area, they would pin their mules by this blowhole because it was cold and they keep their lunches and things in there. Mm-hmm. And so that piqued his curiosity. And there's all of this air just coming out of this thing. And up gorge from the thing, there's Paradox Cave, which goes 200 feet below the river level.
Really?
Extremely complex system. And so they say, well, this could probably be related. So they dig down and they find this thing.
Wow.
And that's why it's called Enigma Cave. It's because Enigma specifically, that cave goes 150 feet below the river level that's right next to it. How does a cave exist 150 feet below the river?
Do any of these passages like go directly beneath the river itself, like the flowing water itself?
So most of the year, during the summer, the river's dry because everything gets sucked into sinkholes and then comes out at the springs. But during the winter, the river runs. But we haven't mapped anything that actually goes underneath the river, even though it has to, because Paradox is on one side, Enigma's on the other.
Mm-hmm.
Enigma's on the same side as the spring, so we know the water from Paradox goes underneath the river and then comes out.
So it's believed essentially to be probably the same system?
It's been dye traced, and they come out at the same spring. So
okay.
Hydraulically, they're related. Whether or not we can physically fit there or not is a different story.
Yeah. Isn't that the different story?
Right. It's when you know it's there and you can't touch it.
That's why I love talking to cavers, because it's especially, you know, project cavers, because it's just could I fit? Could I make it? Could I make it?
What is there?
What is there? Exactly.
One little crawlway is all it takes.
How often has that part of you been, would you say, satisfied? Could that be satisfied? I mean, obviously you keep doing it, so it's satisfied to a degree. But like, that's what you're going for, right? Is that feeling of finding that new passage, right?
A lot of people, yeah. And I like finding new passage. It's fun.
Mm-hmm.
For me specifically, I say cavers are all looking for something different. As a cartographer, I'm looking for the end.
You're looking for, but you haven't found an end.
Right? I want to draw the map. I've been unfortunate that my projects seem to not end.
Well, unfortunate, or is it the other way around?
From a cartographer standpoint, it's unfortunate, but from a cave standpoint, it's amazing.
So it's kind of, it's good either way.
It's a love-hate relationship.
Isn't that the truth?
I want it to go every time, but at the same time, I'd like to draw the map.
Yeah, like, could this just end in breakdown already? Could we have a terminal siphon once or twice?
Especially in miserable passages, which are the ones that seem to go on forever.
Oh, gosh. Okay, yeah, all right. What do you think? I mean, you've got the measurements. Is there a long crawl that you never want to go back to?
Well,
something grim?
Enigma Cave, we've kind of lost access to it, so I'm drawing the map right now, but there's leads in it. But there was a passage in there that was dug by the original crew that goes underneath Rocky Branch, which is a tributary to the Rocky River.
Mm.
And that's a low, muddy belly crawl, and in the wintertime it floods full of water.
Mm.
But all the cave that is going is on that side.
Ugh.
We climb some domes. There's big passage with air ripping through it. But I hate going back there.
But it's a necessary evil, right?
It is. And hopefully one day we'll get access to drive back to the cave and be able to push that stuff. Because now it's a 2-mile hike to the cave, and then you got to go through all of that. And then you got to hike 2 miles back out.
Yeah.
So we're not really pushing that anymore.
Yeah. Access issues. I mean, it comes and goes. Is that a landowner thing or what?
It is.
Yeah.
So the Rocky River is kind of like the Wild West of Van Buren County. There's no houses or anything back there. Most of the gorge is owned by a big land holding company. The guy that bought the house at the end of the road closed the gate because he got tired of people, all the riprap going back there.
Mm.
And cavers got included in that, as
right,
usual.
Cause right.
We are what we are.
We are what we are. Has there ever been a moment for you? I'm always curious about this when it comes to, like, project cavers. Has there ever been a moment for you when you're in this grim, awful passage and you're just like, what the f*** am I doing?
Constantly. The first time I ever did vertical, I went to Bo Allen Pit,
yeah,
which is in Sparta.
First time vertical.
Yeah. And it's have you been to Bo Allen?
No. What is it?
I think it's 156,
wow,
if I remember correctly. Me and my brother and a couple other people, we dropped the pit. We're climbing out. It's me and Jim's son, Josiah, at the bottom. Who's going to climb out last? I don't know. We rock, paper, scissored. I lost.
Mm-hmm.
I'm climbing out by myself. It's my first pit. I get halfway out, and I said, I am never doing this again. This is the dumbest thing I've ever done.
Never doing vertical?
Correct.
Okay.
This is the dumbest thing I've ever done in my life.
Why is that? Why did you think
I'm
that
I'm scared
at the
of
time?
Heights.
Me too.
Deathly scared of heights. So the good thing is, in caves, you can turn your light down a little bit, not have to look.
Right.
But I was scared to death. I was wore out. I wasn't used to the ascenders and using those muscles.
What, were you frogging?
Yes.
Yeah?
Which, that's all I do.
Yeah, it's me too.
And I said, this is not for me. I can't do it. But I got out of the cave, and I sat there for 5 minutes, and I was ready to go again.
Because you did it.
Because I did it. I once. Survived.
Why couldn't I do it again?
Right.
And then everything else happened.
I get sucked into Enigma Cave, which is the most vertical cave in the state.
So you got over that pretty quick then, it seems.
I wouldn't say I was over it. To me, vertical is a means to an end.
Okay.
It's how I get to where I need to go to do what I want to do. Mm-hmm. I'll deal with it if I have to.
But it seems like for you that those leads, those where's the water been leads, is where you find the most booty, right?
Yes. Kind of like in Binkley. You go up and you go over and you drop back down into something. That's how Binkley got so big.
Yeah, but it's not so much ropes and ascenders and harnesses and stuff in Binkley as it is down here.
But it took that to extend the cave.
That's true.
Which is the same thing. Even if we only have to climb one dome to drop over into a parallel passage, mm-hmm. you got to look up these days. You can't just be looking at the floor all the time.
Mm-hmm.
That's the new frontier. You got to dig, you got to map, and you got to climb.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever been on a crew where you looked at a dome and whoever was there was just sure that it wasn't going to go anywhere? And it's not worth checking.
Heart of gold.
Yeah?
We both looked at it and said, it's probably not going to go anywhere, but if we climb it, it's a 100-footer.
Did you climb it?
We did. It's 6 miles long.
And that's
now.
But
from the top either. Halfway up, you drop down to the thing and crawl through a ledge.
And there's the rest.
And there it is. And to be honest, after mapping for a couple of years, we finally pushed the low, miserable lead at the bottom of that dome that the original guys never pushed, which went to the rest of the cave. If they would have just pushed it in 1990, they would have found a lot of it.
Oh, man.
They wouldn't have found all because we had to do some other climbs, but
yeah,
they would have found a pretty good cave system if they would have pushed just a little harder through this thing. If they would have been mapping, they would have had to push it. Everybody needs to map their caves.
Yeah. So they weren't? They were just scooping?
Yeah.
Yeah,
there's so many caves in Tennessee that's what most people do.
There's a lot of that going on, probably, I would imagine.
Supply and demand.
Yeah.
We have a lot of supply in Tennessee.
There's a lot of supply. Like you said, there's no completed projects, but you've put a pin in some where you can say that here's a map of what's been done so far. What else is a work in progress that's pretty close? Or it has been finished?
So I started drawing map. I think the first map I drew was 2017. I've drawn about 30 completed maps since then. Not that I'd say they're all completed, but they were complete enough for me.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of those were things that Marion kind of instigated. He was the little devil on my shoulder for many years. But the man taught me most of what I know about caving.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was very fortunate to have him as a friend.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about Lee, and that was an untimely death, and I don't know, in a way you could say that Marion's was too, because he was in great shape, and it just kind of happened, and I don't know the details. We don't need to get into it, but, you know, I'm sorry that you lost Marion, too. I met him a few times, but I wouldn't say I knew him. You knew him.
I miss him, but I am extremely grateful for the time we had.
Yeah. You saw that perspective. And you're going to carry a bit of that on.
An incredible amount of knowledge in that man that he was willing to share with so many people.
Mm-hmm.
There's, I don't know how many cavers that were touched by Marion Smith.
Awful lot.
Yeah.
Did you spend a lot of time with him outside of caves too? Like over at his house or anything?
Yeah. So he didn't live far from me. We were a good friend. He would call me almost every week.
Yeah.
So I didn't work. I usually work 4/10s, Monday through Thursday.
Yeah.
So I'm off Fridays. Most cavers are off on the weekends.
Hence the Friday project.
So we started the Friday project. He called me Thursday night. We gossip about things and find something to get into Friday. So we spent a lot of time on Fridays together.
Mm-hmm.
I only knew Marion for a few years, but he became one of my closest friends that way.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was so willing to just share his knowledge. And if you were interested in caves, that's all Marion cared about.
Mm-hmm.
He would be your friend.
Yeah. And the Civil War signatures, too. You get him going on that, and it'd be hard to stop him, I imagine.
Historian.
Yeah.
Like no other.
Yeah.
And his mind was just a trap for information.
That's cool.
He could remember so many things.
Yeah.
I would love watching him go caving with people. Just ask them their birthdays. Oh, well, on your birthday, I got up and had eggs for breakfast. And then I went to this cave and did... How do you remember this stuff?
I don't remember what happened this morning.
Right? And if he didn't remember it, you can guarantee he would go home and look it up in his diaries, because he wrote down every day of his life, just about. And he'd call you back and say, this is what I did on your birthday.
That's got to be part of it, then. Just writing something down makes a big difference. Have you picked up on any of that yourself?
I've tried.
You document as much? Yeah.
I've tried, but it's not for me.
It's just not for you? All right.
My documentation are the survey notes.
Okay, all right. I feel you. I keep saying that I'm going to write down more stuff that happens so I can remember, and I just don't do it.
I start, and then it lasts a month or two, and then I
stop.
Yeah,
and then it just stops, yeah. You just don't do it. So was he able to pull memories from a long time ago? Like, I think there might be a lead there in that cave that I visited 35 years ago or something like that.
Yeah, and if he didn't remember, once again, he'd just consult his diaries. You go out with him to a cave, and then he'd pull out his diaries and see all the things around there that he'd done before. And, oh, there might be something here. There might be something there. He was an instigator for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Always suckering everybody.
Yeah.
He knew how to get people to do his work for him.
Well, I mean, yeah.
Not that he wasn't doing work, but he knew how to get people in with him.
Well, but you get more work done when there's more people working on it, right?
For sure.
Yeah. So that he was probably looking for people like you who were eager to carry it on, and he found you. And that's cool. He was a special person for sure.
So many cavers are.
Yeah. And I'm glad you said that, because I completely agree. That's why I started doing this, because I think cavers are the coolest people on the planet.
Such a unique group.
Yeah.
We come from all different backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
We all have different interests. We all have different ideas. But when it comes to caves, we're all driven to the same goal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's to explore things, to figure out things about the world we live in, how things operate, and to share that knowledge with other people. Cavers are notoriously secretive.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we all want to share our findings.
Once you're in, it's not as secretive.
You want to share that. People are like, oh, so-and-so is never going to tell me about Project X. Wait a couple of years. They're going to be telling everybody about Project X. There's nothing somebody wants to do than to tell another caver about the big virgin passage they found.
Yeah.
Whether their ego keeps them from telling you for a year or two is a different story.
Yeah, you just got to wait. You just got to hold on to that. That's a great place to wrap for now, I think.
Because
we got to get back. But I hope we're able to pick this up, because we've only done about 30 minutes or so, 35. That was a lot of fun. Thank you.
Hey, thank you.
All right, so Zeke, we are back. I am in the studio. You are at home, and I don't remember what we talked about.
It's all that SCCI beer.
Which you had plenty of, but I didn't pay the $20 to the SCCI for my cup, because I brought plenty from home, and I was like, man, I got my own, but I should give money to the SCCI for this.
That'd be... Well, I got enough for both of us.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, then neither of us remember, I guess.
Right. I definitely do.
So, I mean, I had a great time talking to you, and I was really honored to be talking to you after, you know, following some of your work via social media and stuff like that, and people, you know, talking about things that you've done, which is an awful lot. And so it was just really cool to talk to you then, and it's really, really cool to have you now. So I want to hear about the first cave that you surveyed, Mary Branch Cave. This was a dig?
It was. So I went there to a cave called Lost Creek Resurgence Cave, which is above Lost Creek Cave. There's a cave. It's about 500 feet long. Water comes out across the Hartzell Bench, drops, and goes back into the ground again. And there's a big cave at the bottom called Lost Creek. The Nashville Grotto had been doing a trip there one Saturday. And after the trip, me and Justin Heidrich started poking around the other caves and ended up in Lost Creek Resurgence. At the back of the cave, there was a breakdown pile blowing a bunch of air out, which really intrigued me. And so I went back with Warren Wyatt later, and we were going to see if we could dig this thing open. Within about 30 minutes of digging, I'd say, we had removed enough rocks that we could get through, and we crawled through the breakdown for maybe 30 feet, and then we were in standing passage with a big stream. And we're like, what is this?
you got what you came for.
Yeah, we found this huge system. At least we thought we did, so we just took off scooping, running as fast as we could. We were both fairly new cavers. And we went, and the cave split. One direction to the left was kind of an overflow, and the main upstream went to the right. And it was in this area where the cave split at. There's a big pool, and when we were going through the pool, I started yelling and running, and Warren said, "What are you yelling about? And there's something in this water, Warren." And he started laughing and didn't believe me, and then he got up there and we saw it, and it was a big white catfish.
What?
Probably 18 inches long.
Whoa! It's
the only time I've ever seen anything like that. So we found that in there and thought that was interesting, but we decided we had to map this cave because we had found all this virgin passage. So we came back. We'd never surveyed anything before. So we decided we were just going to teach ourselves. We came one Friday after work, and we surveyed the old part of Lost Creek Resurgence Cave and kind of learned how to survey in there. It took us one afternoon to do that. The next day, we came back, and Marion Smith joined us, and we started surveying the virgin stream that we had found. And we surveyed all the way to the breakdown in the back of that, and there's just tons of air coming out of that breakdown, too, but it's very dangerous to dig in, so we didn't dig on that one. We came back probably 1 week later after that, and we surveyed to the left that split down the overflow. And Warren and I were going down through there, and Warren kept talking about how he just didn't feel like this was Virgin Cave. And I was like, oh, it has to be. We dug it open, right?
Yeah, no kidding.
So anyway, we kept going, and at the end of the day, we went through a tight spot, popped back open into a big room. We said, we'll put a dot here, so that it'll be easy to find next time, and we'll come back. And we put the dot on the wall, and there was a spray-painted arrow right above it.
Oh, man.
So we went back home, and we started looking at all the maps and caves around and realized we had dug another entrance to Mary Branch Cave.
Oh, all right. So
even though only about 30 feet of it was virgin, it was still a great way to learn how to survey a cave. And the cave had already had a map, but now it has one with three entrances on it.
Okay. Well, I mean, another entrance, that ain't nothing.
No, and it was a lot of fun. Good learning experience. And that cave meant a lot to me. It really grew on me through that trip. Last November, we went back there with Jim Fox and saw the catfish again that no one believed was there. We have videos of it this time. Also, my now wife, Calla, was with us, and we actually got married in the cave that day.
Oh, man, no kidding.
So now I joke and call it Married Branch.
Married Branch. Congrats on that, by the way. That's cool. I've heard of weddings happening in caves. Did you guys then take that crawlway to get there, or did you go in a different entrance?
No, we did the through trip. So we went in the new entrance and then came out the big original entrance, and right there at the twilight of the big original entrance is where we did the paperwork and everything.
Oh, okay. Were you in like
marriage?
Were you in like formal wear and stuff? Or
no?
No. Okay.
We're very informal.
Okay. Right on. Okay. So Married Branch Cave, as it were. What about Hellhole Sink?
Hellhole Sink Cave. That is actually just above Mary Branch Cave. If you go all the way up to the top of the cap rock on the sandstone, there's a big drop off the other side. There's a giant sinkhole above this whole Lost Creek area. It's been known for years, and Hellhole Sink is the name of the sinkhole. In the side of it, there's a short 500 foot long Pennington cave. And it was before the Mary Branch thing. Actually, me and John Zetterberg and my brother Peyton, I think it was on New Year's Day of 2016, we went up there to look at this little 500 foot long cave. We did the cave, was getting ready to leave. My brother went over to take a leak by the bluff. He said, "Hey, there's all this air coming out."
Right where I'm peeing. We got to crawl in here.
Exactly. And so we did. And we found a couple of other just little entrances that looped over to this other side where we had been that no one knew was there. But over to the right, there was even more air coming out of some breakdown. We dug that out of the way. And popped up into an area and we started looking around and seeing all this disturbed dirt and started considering maybe this was an old saltpeter mine that had collapsed or something. Didn't really make sense because of the location of it. And that's whenever, I think it was John, noticed that there were claw marks on the walls. And as we were going, we started counting that these were depressions in the dirt and they were bear wallers. And we counted 13 of those and hundreds of claw marks all over the walls. And then we popped out of the crawlway into a stream passage. And we're in a Pennington cave, which are usually pretty joint-controlled, low, short caves. Because the lens of limestone in the Pennington in this area, they're very sparse and they're not very big usually. But apparently we had hit a pretty good lens of it. And it opened up into walking passage. And that thing went for several thousand feet upstream with claw marks to the ceilings and some Whoa. Of the mud banks on the sides of the walls, which was very cool. John Zetterberg led the mapping project on that and ended up being about a 2.8 miles long, I think. So it's the second or third longest Pennington cave in the state now.
Oh, my goodness. And wait, I'm sorry, I may have missed this, but when was that kind of most recently explored, surveyed?
The survey of that cave started in 2019, and I think John finished it by 2020.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
So that was pretty recently.
Yeah, I guess so. So, all right, the bear wallows. I mean, I don't know if you've talked to anybody who might know this or anything, but do we know about when that might have occurred, era-wise?
No one that I've talked to has been able to put a date on it. I talked briefly to Blaine Schubert at the last TCS meeting, and he seemed somewhat interested in it. He would be the guy that could probably either he would know or know someone that could date that sort of thing. But to my knowledge, no one has dated it.
Right. But the fact that it's still that they're still there, I mean, that indicates that that's, you know, old passage that hasn't really been disturbed by anything. Some, you know, not even water, of course.
Yeah, it's in a dry pocket between the stream and the bluff. And it seems like there was just a collapse of part of the bluff wall, which is what blocked off access to this, where that's where all the air was coming out. We moved a few rocks there. Mm-hmm. So definitely hadn't been disturbed in a long time, other than little animals.
So were you on a good bit of those trips through 2020 when that thing topped out, or at least topped out to where it is now?
Yeah, I helped John with a lot of the survey trips.
Is there anything else to find in there, you think?
There's some real low things that people could push. But
we'll
it
let
was
them
explored
do it.
Pretty well. Justin Huffman helped, so you know how Justin is.
Oh, yeah, he's determined.
Pretty hard. They even dug up another entrance on the other side of the bluff, so you can through trip, go from the sinkhole and come out the other side of the mountain there.
That's pretty cool. Was that in kind of part of the areas that he was looking in on his big odyssey?
Yeah, he definitely is in White County, and he did some stuff in White County for sure.
Yeah. So you've done a lot of caving with Marion, including Rumbling Falls. You did some surveying in Rumbling Falls?
Yeah. Marion asked me to survey the new entrance. So that was the first surveying that I did in there. It was right. He had been rock fell and hit him on the head, and he had to go to the hospital, and he was out for a little while. And during that is when the connection of the new entrance happened. So he asked me to go survey that. So I surveyed that. And then after he got better, me and him went in there several other times surveying just little nooks and crannies around the new entrance area looking for things. Never really found much. Those guys pushed it hard back in the day.
Yeah.
But there are definitely some leads in there.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Man, so more places there that could be found. I mean, that's a big old cave, right? That's a pretty cool place.
It's a huge cave. Have you been?
No, I haven't. But everybody keeps telling me that I got to do the would it be the through trip or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just looking on Facebook on my memories. It popped up. I guess 2019 was whenever I did the through trip with Jim Fox and Marion and Sharon and Justin Huffman, Calla and Jim's son Bryce. We all did that. Well, was that 4 years ago now?
Man.
From what? Today.
How long does it take to do that trip on average, I guess?
I would say average, give yourself 10 hours.
Okay. All right.
And that's going a nice leisurely pace. You can stop and look at things. There's been people who have done it very quickly, but they were just running.
Yeah. I like a good long trip. I would love to come down and do that one sometime. That'd be fantastic, man.
It is. It's one of the best trips in the area, I think.
But you get the rumble. You get the rumble room done right away, though, right? I mean, that's like right off the bat.
Yeah, you do a little bit of canyoning and things at the beginning, but then you drop the rumble room, and that's really when the trip starts.
What a start.
You put all your vertical gear up and start walking. But I always take a pair of dry clothes with me and dry shoes, because about halfway through, you get out of the water, and you change into something dry and nice, and you're just walking through a big, giant borehole for almost the rest of the day.
Is that the last of the verticals, the rumble room, and then you're in the water, you get the wetsuit on, and then you're in the water for a while?
Yep.
And that's it?
You start in the Bangor Limestone, and you drop down, and then, see, the cave was never supposed to go, because they were headed upstream in the Bangor. So it should be petering out or going to something on the surface.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened was this little Bangor cave intersected a larger cave below. At the rumble room. The rumble room eroded out, and when part of the ceiling fell out, and it intersected this other cave. So you go upstream, and then you go through some dry passage, and then when you drop the rumble room, you pass all the way through the Mont Eagle Limestone, and you're going all the way pretty much to base level. So when you're at that base level of the water table, you just follow the river all the way out almost.
Okay.
There's a parallel side trunk that's dry, so that's how you manage to stay dry for a lot of it. You follow the river about halfway and then hop over into that parallel trunk.
Oh, gotcha. All right. Yeah, I was talking to Aaliyah Moore about that. I mean, she talked about it a little bit on the podcast. But, yeah, I mean, I've been intrigued by that trip for a long time.
You don't have to go into the parallel trunk if you don't want to.
I'll do whatever anybody wants to take me to.
You have to go up a giant breakdown pile all the way up through the Mont Eagle to the Hartzell and then back down the other side called Mountain Bypass. And when we went the second time I did it with Marion, Marion didn't want to do that. He said, I'm not going up that big hill. We're just going to stay in the river. It is a long way through the river. It was a very long day. And Marion kept doubting himself. He said, I hadn't been here in a long time. The connection that we need to go through was dug open by Don Hunter. I hope it didn't flood shut. And his concerns grew all day long as we just kept marching down the river. And I was like, if we have to go all the way back up this thing, we'd be so mad at you, Marion. But finally we found it. So you don't have to go over the mountain bypass. You can go the slog through the river.
Well, but why? But, you know, I mean, only a caver knows why.
Right?
Yeah.
You got to see it all.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's part of it, isn't it? And he certainly did. And it sounds like you did. Was it worth it?
I'm glad I went once. I would not ever go that way again.
All right. Had he been?
He had, yeah. But not since they surveyed it, because they used that dry bypass mountain from then on, I think. Very rarely did they take that river route. Because what he had forgotten is the river made a huge oxbow there. So it took forever to get this big oxbow back over to where we needed to be.
When did he find that cave?
I think it was 2000, 1999 or 2000.
Oh, wow.
He didn't find it. It was found by a guy named John Fred Hutchison.
Okay.
And him and Robert Oakes and a couple of other people had kind of pushed it. But it was a Bangor cave going upstream and no one thought much of it. They had found some other things down in Big Bottom, and they were pushing those caves and kind of gave up on Rumbling Falls. And that's when Marion decided to go start surveying. When they found the Rumble Room, he kept it a secret.
Because,
They surveyed miles and miles and miles of that cave with it being completely secret.
Oh, man. Well, you got to keep a secret like the Rumble Room. I mean, you find something like that, you got to play that thing out, I guess. I don't know.
They were trying to. It finally had to come to light whenever the local city of Spencer was going to dump sewage into a stream there that sank and actually went through the river. So they revealed the cave in order to stop the sewage plant from dumping into it.
And they were successful?
They were. It was a huge ordeal.
Oh, wow.
Lots of drama.
Ooh. Well, I guess that's not our story to tell, but man, that's intriguing. Heart of Gould?
Yeah, Heart of Gold.
Heart of Gold.
I'm not sure how everyone pronounces it, but we call it, it's on Golden Mountain, but it's spelled like that.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. All right. Well, you're the local, so you get it right. I'm the reader, so I get it wrong. So this was cool. I mean, this was a cave that was found like 1990.
Yeah. Doug Plemons found it in 1990. He was a prolific ridge walker. He turned in hundreds and hundreds of caves in Tennessee. A lot of those in the early 90s.
You got in on this. How big was the cave when you got involved?
It was a 500-foot long cave. I think it was 220-ish feet deep. Had several pits in it. Ended at a big dome room. They said it was over 100 feet tall.
Okay.
So that's what got me curious in it from the start. And I mentioned it to Jim Fox, and he was wanting to climb all these 100-footers that he could. And so he got very interested in it. And that's when we decided we were going to go climb that big dome in the back. That was the end of 2019, I think.
Yeah, that sounds from the article, it sounds right. So I mean, 100-foot, that's pretty good dome, but you can see that high. I mean, had people looked that high and saw something that they could maybe get to?
When you're at the bottom, it doesn't really look like there's a whole lot up there, and I'm not really sure if anybody had looked. Especially in the 90s, people were trying to follow the water down and people weren't looking up so much. But even at the bottom of this thing, you can't really see anything that looks obvious.
And okay, did you know something then about the geology of the area that might indicate that there might be something else at that elevation or something? Or did you just go and look?
Well, I was interested in the cave because I knew there was a big spring down below it. And this should drain to that spring because water goes in the ground right close to the entrance of this cave. And actually, when it rains hard enough, it goes into the entrance of the cave.
Mm.
And it follows its way down. And at the bottom of that big dome, there's a little tiny crack. And beyond that crack, that was, I think, Robert Oakes blasted that open sometime in the 90s. Marion intrigued him to, hey, we got to see where the water goes. So they blasted that crack open. They found a little stream, but it was low and awful, and they just turned around and left. But they were looking to go down because they knew that water would intersect and come up this thing with all this big spring at the bottom called Cherry Creek Spring. So I was interested in that and knew there was a potential that it could go to that. So there was that as well as the 100-foot dome. I kind of am more interested in the hydrology, where's the water go? And Jim's the dome climber, and he wanted to put another 100-footer on his list.
Right. And so ultimately that was where the cave continued, right?
It was. So Jim started climbing that at the end of 2019. And then in the beginning of 2020, he went back with Justin Huffman and Marion. And they finished the climb up to a little ledge, 107 feet off the floor. And started up a little bit of a stair-stepping series that eventually went to a little too tight crack. They turned around, and on their way back, Justin came down first. He rappelled down the ropes, got to the ledge, rigged in, went down the 107. Jim was behind him, and Marion was in the back. As Jim was coming over one of the shorter ledges right above the 107-foot ledge, some rocks that were above him let loose, and these boulders came down and hit him while he was rappelling. He lost control of his rappel and fell down onto some rocks that were wedged into this narrow spot at 107 feet off the floor. He landed there and a boulder fell and fractured his femur.
Oh my God.
So he was pinned there. Justin comes up and is able to roll the rock off of him. Marion came down and started tending to Jim while Justin exited the cave to go call for help.
He ran fast, right?
Very fast. So while he was doing that, Marion yo-yoed the pit a couple times, getting aspirin and things like that for Jim, hanging out with him. I was on my way back from Nashville and got the call from Justin and put the pedal to the floor. And I showed up about the same. I called my wife, who was home. She was my girlfriend at the time. I said, you got to go over there and show people where the cave is. And because she knew where it was. And I said, you got to show people how to get there. Rescue squad is going to show up. And I showed up not long after that and met with Jim's son. We went up there, and the Hamilton County showed up very quickly, and they spent all night getting Jim out of there.
Man.
It was a very scary night.
Yeah, I guess so. All right. Walk me then through where they had to take him. You know, I mean, obviously they set the leg. They got him in a sked or something and got him out. There's a vertical element to getting him out?
There's a very vertical element.
Yeah.
So to from where Jim was, he's on a ledge 107 feet off the floor, just kind of on some breakdown wedge there.
Yeah.
He's actually, I think he said his butt was like in a hole in the breakdown with nothing underneath him while he was sitting there. So they get up there and they had to, instead of lowering him to the floor, the way you enter this dome is about, I don't have it right in front of me, but I think it's a 60-foot rappel from the window to the bottom of the dome. So they hooked up a rope out of the window up to the ledge and flew Jim in the sked down halfway down the dome and through this window. Once they got him through the window, there was a 48-foot pit that he had to go up. At the top of the 48-foot pit was a very narrow crack that had to be blasted to facilitate the sked to be able to get through with Jim. So while they were rigging everything and medicating Jim, getting his leg set, they had a crew blasting. Clinton Elmore and a couple of other people, I think, were blasting this narrow spot out so that they could physically get Jim through. They got him through there. From there, he has to go over the top of a 55-foot pit. Then he's at the base of the entrance, which is another, it's a 55 total, but it's an offset 35 and a 20. So they had to go up this double step pit, and then he was finally out the entrance. Mm. A lot of very technical rigging. No one but the Hamilton County Rescue Squad could have got him out of there.
Really?
I don't think anybody could. The local rescue squad put their hands up and said, we don't know what to do. And they let Hamilton County handle it. And those guys are some real professionals.
Well, I mean, okay. Correct me if I'm wrong. So these are like, these are non-cavers?
No, Hamilton County has a lot of cavers in it.
Oh, okay. So, all right. Because, I mean, here, you know, here in Indiana, we hear about, you know, local rescue, you know, EMS and whatnot, deferring to the cave rescue specialists, you know, the sort of unofficial group who are essentially there to consult, but if you know, ultimately they end up doing the work because non-cavers don't want to go in there. But it sounds like these are professionals who are also happen to be cavers.
Yes, it's the Hamilton County Cliff and Cave Rescue Unit.
Oh, okay. So all right.
This is like guys like Buddy Lane and Brad Tipton, great cavers, been doing it for a long time, know how to do rescue stuff. If you want, if you're in the tag area and you want to be a part of a cave rescue squad, those are the guys that you go.
Oh, okay. All right.
They're the professionals.
Gotcha. All right, cool. I thought this was like a an official like local government thing, but this is cavers helping cavers.
Well, they are official though.
Okay.
Out of Hamilton County, which is Chattanooga.
Well, I mean, with as many caves as you got down there, you might as well have an official element helping out, right?
When you need it, you need it.
Yeah, and you needed it that day.
Definitely.
All right, so there's that. That happened, but then you find Cave.
Yeah, so Jim being Jim, within a couple of months, he's ready to go caving again.
After breaking his femur. It's like, all right, well, I'll take however much time it takes to... Was he in any pain when he went back?
Yeah. Jim doesn't let much get him down.
All right, well...
We're going to have to get him on here to talk to you.
I hope so.
He has got stories.
You hear us, man? Okay, so he's back.
The broken femur is just a bump in Jim's life. He's been through a lot. He has some stories to tell.
That's admirable.
So, yeah, we went back and started surveying the cave. So me and Jim went, and we surveyed about half of it, and then we came back the next week with Marion and John Zetterberg and got to the dome. Jim wanted to go up to the rescue location. I was scared to go up there, but he talked me into it. Mm-hmm. So we survey up to there, and then I call it quits for the day. I'm like, it's spooky up here. There's a hypodermic needle where they were giving you drugs, and there's bandages, and I don't want to look at this. So we got to get out of here.
Wow.
So Jim takes a bunch of pictures, and we skedaddle. But while we were there, we noticed when I was climbing up the 107, I noticed there was a window that was underneath where Jim got hurt. And as I told you earlier, Jim said there was a hole in the breakdown there. So we came back. Jim talked me into rappelling through the hole down to the breakdown ledge or to the window that I had seen. And he said, does it go anywhere? And I said, well, there's a little crawlway, but I don't think it's going to do anything. Just stay up there. So I crawl through it, and it opens up on the other side, 40-foot tall room, going passage. So I call back. I say, unfortunately, it still goes. So that's when we started surveying intensely. Pretty quickly, we came back in contact with the water. We surveyed over a couple trips and got all the way down to the water level and hit a big river that is associated with that spring. We called it the Golden River. And it became, through that, it became the deepest cave in White County at 356 feet deep, because we went from the Hartzell all the way down to the St. Louis limestone through the entire Mont Eagle, which is the thickest limestone layer here. We continued to climb domes in it. So we thought the river was the big discovery. We were very happy with that. Leads were petering out. And then Jim climbed another dome with the help of Chris McMichael.
He didn't learn his lesson.
Didn't learn his lesson at all. So he climbs another dome in the cave and gets up to this odd area full of strange church. We named it the church because Jim's a pastor and Chris McMichael, who helped him, is also a pastor. So that's the church.
Right on.
And from the church, there was another rappel or two, and the cave just kept getting tighter and grosser. And I was about to give up on it, but Jim went back one day with Chris and Robert Oakes, and they went to the end of this tight canyon we call Gold Rush Canyon, and they bolted this strange pit. So you have to, there's a belly crawl at roof level, and you have to crawl out over into the top of a pit and rig in while you're at the ceiling.
Oh, my God.
You back out backwards. And they did all this and rigged this last thing, dropped into a big room. Robert Oak said, all right, I'm done for the day, and he left. And Jim and Chris went scooping, and within a couple thousand feet, they were in dry, gypsum-covered passage with flowers all over the walls, and just like, it looks like it snowed through there. There's just so much gypsum all over the place. And that went on for at least 1,000 feet, gypsum beards hanging off.
Wow.
And this went all the way through almost to the other side of the mountain. And there's actually three domes back there that are over 100 feet tall, but I don't think Jim's going to climb those.
No, why not?
It's too far to get to.
Yeah, all right.
But yeah, overall, it ended up being we're 1,500 feet shy of the 6 mile mark right now.
Wow. From something that was known to be about, 500 plus?
500 feet long to.
4 years ago?
Yep, to now we're at 6 miles.
Wow, man. That's something else.
And there's more there.
And you're saying the frontiers are probably some more dome climbs?
There's dome climbs, and there's a couple of other little areas that could still be pushed, but the horizontal leads are starting to wrap up, and we're probably not going to hit all the vertical leads before I just draw up the map, leave it for the next generation.
Right on.
See, the thing is, I look out my window right over here, and I'm looking at Gold Mountain.
Oh, man.
The cave is literally right there.
There's your inspiration. It's just, you're just looking right at it.
Jim just lives 5 minutes up the road, and every morning he gets up and looks at the same mountain. And our biggest discovery collectively has been like 5 minutes from our houses.
What are you hiding, mountain?
Right. See, the mountain I live under has a cave with a bunch of air going in it and a big spring coming out. And I know there's something under here, too.
Yeah, but you got how many... You got so many projects going, I'm sure. It's just like, all right, one of these days I'll look here.
Yeah. I've mapped a couple of the caves on this mountain. Hadn't found anything yet. Briggs Cave is probably the one that has the most potential. At the bottom of it is a crack just blowing tons of air. Mm. Somebody needs to do some chemical persuasion on to get some rock out of the way.
I'm looking at the Heart of Gold map that you sent over to me, which I think can be found on this Snafu Grotto blog. And it looks cool. I mean, you've got all of the vertical element that you might associate with a tag cave, and then it just drops down to the Golden River. What's this freezeway, this sort of tight area? Why'd you call it that?
Okay, so that's right before you connect into the river. So we were going through that, and there was so much air going through there that it will just freeze you to death. It's muddy. It's
so you're wet going through there, and
yeah, you're soaked at this point.
Oh,
you've got water at least to your knees, and there's parts where you can't quite stand up, so you gotta get down into it. You're at base level, so all the walls are coated in mud, so you're just slipping and sliding, and the air just rips through there. We about froze to death surveying it, so I called it the freezeway. Especially since as soon as you step out of that passage into the river, for some reason, the river passage has warm air in it. It's got to be pulling in outside air from somewhere.
Yeah.
So you freeze to death, and then you step out into the river, and it's like being in a sauna almost.
That's
just from the difference in the temperature.
That's weird. That's what. Well, so that indicates that that really is the only significant passageway connecting that river level to the cave above, right? Or you might assume such?
I don't know if it's the only one, but it's one of a very select few.
Okay.
It's definitely funneling a lot of the air through there.
Mm.
So that's one of the main connectors. I guess that's why a lot of the water's still going through there.
Well, I mean, okay, so if you were to go to that cave and then, you know, find your way to the frontier, instead of spending the amount of time in the freezeway that you had to as you were surveying it, I mean, how quickly could you get through that, do you think?
Well, to go over to where the gypsum and stuff is, you never even have to go there.
You don't even have to go through it.
Not to get to the gypsum.
Oh, not so to get...
Which is where the frontier is,
okay.
I would say. It's not down on the river level anymore. It's over. So you go about halfway to the river, and then you go up this dome to the church that Jim and Chris climbed.
Okay, so that... All
and
right.
that cuts over to a parallel thing, and that goes through all the gypsum and back to the three big domes in the back.
That's so cool.
Because see that... Gypsum passage goes all the way through the entire mountain. So you start on one side of the mountain at the entrance of the cave, and once you get to the other side of the gypsum passage, you're under the flank of the opposite side of the mountain.
Gosh, these pictures of the gypsum passage and, you know, the flowers and the beards coming down. That's gorgeous, man. What a find.
It's the best thing I've ever been a part of finding.
Yeah, could you say that? Really?
It is definitely the best thing I've ever been a part of finding.
You've been there for a lot of stuff, too.
I don't know about that.
Well, but I mean, more than me. But that's not too hard, I guess.
It's a very, 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 one of the nicest gypsum areas I've been. It's comparable to Blue Spring Cave gypsum, but harder to get to.
See, I haven't been to Blue Spring Cave, but I've heard about some of the amazing places in there. That's pretty cool that you found something comparable. Enigma Cave looks like a maze.
It is a maze in multi-dimensions.
You sent me an email. You sent me the map, and it said, if it makes you go cross-eyed, don't worry. It doesn't make any sense to me either. You drew the map, man.
Right?
It still doesn't make any sense. So you're quite the cartographer. I'm like looking at this map. You really do a great job. And like, but to make sense of something like this or to try to make sense of something like this, I mean, good God, how'd you even do this?
A lot of layers. And it's going to have to, for the final map, all those levels will have to be pulled out so you can see how things relate and what passages are underneath because it's so overlapping.
Well, I mean, I guess the vertical extent view might make more sense than the sort of overlay, the horizontal here. Have you played with making that part of it yet?
A little bit, but it's... Looks very similar, just in a different dimension. It's still a mess.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many pits and domes in that cave. I think in 2019, when I counted them for an article I wrote, I think there was something like 50 rig points to pits and domes in that thing. Whew. I think we've got 2,000 feet of rope hanging in the cave right now.
Wow.
Just for navigation purposes. There's so many things all over the place that interconnect that it's a real mess. You go through this spiraling corkscrew of breakdown that have been mined out, which is pretty scary. You just don't look at anything and float through. But once you get down there, the cave is just a maze. And somehow the original crew found their way through this maze of crawlways and things. to a huge dome room they call the Enigma Dome. And this thing's 270 feet tall. I think it's about 250 feet wide and over 300 feet long. There's a 246-foot waterfall that crashes down right in the middle of the room. So to get in the room, you rappel out of a 50-foot window right next to the waterfall. It's pretty incredible.
Nice.
So those guys did that, and they mapped a little over a mile, maybe close to 2 miles of cave. They got at the base level there, there's some trunks that kind of spread out a little bit. But later, Marion got interested in the cave and had people start dome climbing. And that's when the vertical nature really took off and showed what existed in what we call the dome complex, which is just layer upon layer of stacked cave that are interconnected by pits and domes all over the place.
Mm. I mean, as I look at this, I mean, that southern portion is this sort of spaghetti bowl maze. And then the northern portion looks like it makes a little more sense. And I'm assuming that that's all lower level?
Yeah, the big long trunks are off the bottom, except for one that's at the top of the waterfall that kind of goes northwest.
Okay, all right.
There's one that kind of goes up and to the right that has a lot of water in it.
Yeah.
That's at the top of the waterfall. So I think it was 2014, they finally, I think it was Mike Green and Elliot Stahl, a couple of other people finally got into the window where the waterfall comes out of. They bolt climbed up there. So it was a funny story. Clinton Elmore, I believe, got Derek Bristol to come and start climbing that big dome.
Oh, yeah. His name's on the map, isn't it?
Marion had the same idea and talked John Harmon from West Virginia Underground into coming and climbing the dome on the same day, and neither one knew it. And they all met up at the dome to climb it on the same day and didn't know. So they all worked together and started climbing it. But
you got the dream team.
Right?
They didn't even know it.
Didn't even know it. So they all, I don't know how that worked out. When you get up to the Hartzell layer, the rock was so rotten nobody wanted to climb it. And somehow Mike Green got involved and he climbed across the Hartzell. And I believe he said the rock was so rotten that he could drill, put a bolt in, and then if he wanted to, he could grab the bolt and just pull it back out of the wall.
Oh, God. That's horrifying.
250 feet off the floor. Next to a giant crashing waterfall.
Oh, God.
So these guys who have things that I don't have climbed over there and got into the waterfall window, and there's several thousand feet of passage up there, and it's actually not been completely explored.
Wow.
Up there, you have to do a J rappel across the top of that big giant room into the window that the waterfall is coming out of. And I've done it 3 times, and I have to change my underwear every time.
So it's at about 4.5 miles right now and still going, or is it tough to push that cave right at this moment?
We used to be able to drive almost all the way to the cave, which made it easy to push the further frontiers of the cave and haul tons of rope and bolting gear and all that in there.
Yeah.
And we've lost that access to be able to drive there. So now it's a 2-mile hike each way to get there. So we haven't really done much there recently, even though there are great leads left still.
Boy. And I mean, you presented on this at convention. Which convention?
2019. It was in Cookeville here.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that one. I almost went to that one. I'm sorry that I didn't.
It's the only one I've been to.
Well, right down the road, I guess, huh?
Right.
Was that well received? Well, that was right before you lost access then, right?
It was right before. We lost access later that year.
Oh, man.
But that was the same year that we started on Heart of Gold. So.
Oh, okay. Well, then you kind of Indiana Jones did. You put the bag of sand over the idol and worked on that. Okay, so did you know that you were going to lose access? Was like this a looming thing? Was it just a friendly landowner who moved away? What happened?
It's on the Rocky River, and the upper portion of the Rocky River has no houses. It just has this old logging road, and it's kind of like the Wild West.
Mm.
And people go back there and ride four-wheelers and camp and hunt and do whatever, make meth. It's like the Wild West.
Yeah, yeah.
And so a guy bought a house right at the end of that road And he got tired of all the riffraff going by, so he closed the gate, put a lock on it. And he was giving us access for a little while, but he said it just got so out of control. He didn't want anybody going through there anymore.
Ah, yeah. I guess I understand that, but that's unfortunate.
It is, but there's so much to do.
Yeah, there's a lot more for you to find down there.
Can't let one thing slow you down. The day that we went and lost access, we were going to the cave, found out we couldn't go, and Marion automatically had another, well, we'll just drive over here. Here's another cave we can go map. One thing I miss about him is he had an endless supply of leads and projects to work on.
Oh, God, I bet.
He could just rattle them off.
Man.
Well, we can't go there. Well, there's something right here.
No problem. Don't get heartbroken. We got work to do elsewhere.
Right.
Man, Zeke, obviously your caving career is far from over. I hope we get to talk again. But thanks for the talk at Sarah, and thanks for the addendum just now. This is great stuff, man. Let's go caving sometime when I come down.
Definitely, anytime. And yeah. I appreciate the opportunity. I love your podcast. You do a great service for the community with it.
Man, thanks, man. I really appreciate that. All right, until next time. Awesome. Thank you, Zeke. Thanks so much. And thank you for listening. This has been the Caving Podcast. And that was the third and final installment of my Sierra 2023 series. Thanks again to Alan Hatcher for having me out and everybody else who I met up with and talked to at Sierra Cave Carnival. I'd love to go back someday. Caver's Paradise was cool. And I know Sarah travels around, but it was awfully nice to be invited. And I can tell you that next month, my guest will be Patty Cummings. Patty is an Indiana caver. She is very involved with the Richard Blends Nature Conservancy, which is where Buckner Cave is. And she is the partner of another guest who's been on the podcast, Sam Freshour, who drew the Sullivan Cave map and several other maps of Indiana caves. Also wrote A Guide to Caves in Karst of Indiana. Patty's a lawyer, so I love the way her mind works. And she was a good communicator. We'll talk with Patty in September. And thanks for listening. You can support the podcast by supporting our sponsors, past and present. Swago, get you a nice Swago pack at swagogear.com. Organic Robot Designs. Charlie's busy. He's busy. So if you need something from Charlie, if you want t-shirts for a grotto fundraiser or something like that, hit him up. Just Google Organic Robot Designs. Also, El Spelio Lights, which are being sold by OnRope One. And of course, our current sponsor, Sophie Reaptress. Get you a nice cave suit at sophiereaptress.com. Custom made. All right, I think that's it. I'll see you at Capers, Cave Capers, this weekend. Come up to Indiana. It'll be a good time. All right, till next time, kill nothing but time.